For instance, if you wanted to stay on Earth as a helper of some sort, you first had to learn how to work in and with the invisible. Angels wander invisibly around, everywhere on Earth. But why don't they do anything, you might ask? Why don't they save humans from diseases, accidents, drugs, violence? Why is there so much evil? The answer is, because of man's free will. Not even angels have the right to go against it. And another thing, man's karma. The law of cause and effect is inexorable. The angels have lots of restrictions, because every human being has their own path to experience. Have you ever heard someone say he had a guardian angel? You can be sure he did. I am reunited with my soul group. Besides me, there are only two of us who wear the deep blue cloak, one man and one woman. The three of us got to operate as teachers in the group. We had gone through the same school and learned everything from the beginning. Together we have swum in the air ocean as small sparks of life, and after that we have joined the great, wonderful creation. We did not meet in my last life on Earth in Sweden, but we knew each other well from other incarnations. The man is called Henry and the woman's name is Diri. All three of us are at different stages of development, even as angels, and therefore we teach in entirely different ways. From an earthly perspective, it feels a bit silly for me to call myself an angel. But everyone who ends up in the angelic realm is called angel, even if it does not really correspond to the earthly term. Angels are not an ethereal people, or anything else that is in accordance with the view of the Bible. Angels are light workers and their tasks vary tremendously. Sharla belongs to the angelic realm. Zar comes from the master's realm. I had one of each kind, so I could be guided and learn to evolve from my task as a light worker. What that task is, I still haven't fully understood. I believe the expression "you grow with your task" suits me well. I also believe you can have several tasks, which gradually radiate out from the same core. They are part of the growing that continues for as long as you wish. But so far, my job suits me very well. I tell my readers about the different worlds and their realms. Many authors have already done this. There are authors who, through a channel, have described their lives after death. Those descriptions don't bear any resemblance to what I have told you. Therefore, the reader must take his, her own stand to what I describe and take in those things which feel right. Each author has visited his own kind of world on this side. Each receiving medium thinks in her own way, interprets in her own way, and has her own ambitions. The important thing for all of us who convey messages from the world of light is to make our light and our love come alive for our readers. I also think it's important that every soul group mediates its knowledge in different words, because humans are so different, assimilate things in different ways, wish and think differently. These differences are confusing. It is because of them that there are so many religious views, when actually one single God is enough, one single love doctrine. That's how it was meant from the beginning. Everything was simpler then. Nowadays, there is enormous confusion. This is represented in art, in music, in fact, in the whole society of today. Earth is the main concern for the angels. There are other planets that also need help, but none in such difficulties as Mother Earth. That's why I would like this book to be an answer to many cries for help, an answer that can give comfort and bring relief to thoughts of despair. Unfortunately, it is only possible to teach those who really listen to think in such a way that the power finds the right path. 14. Disobedience is punished. There is a word called precipitate. It is used to describe how a thought wish is realized. I have always wondered how it works. Now I know, but I did not acquire that knowledge without pain. Perhaps the word pain does not fit so well in the angelic realm. But one can do stupid things even here. I could, anyway. What I am going to tell you now may sound like a fairy tale. However, I promise that this has happened to me for real here. It is one of the lessons that made me laugh a lot afterwards. But on that occasion I wasn't laughing. I now live in a wonderful little house. I did not want a big, elegant place to live. I would rather recreate something like my old farm cottage, which eventually became our family's summer cottage. I was able to write there, my imagination flowed there, and I enjoyed every minute in that environment. It had grown together with me. That was what I wanted here, too, because the angelic realm is the land of possibilities, where you create what you wish for. But in the beginning, it was the very dwelling that caused me a lot of trouble. When Sharla and Zar left me with my soul group after the journey to Shambhala, Henry asked me where I lived. If I had no place to live, I was welcome to sleep at his house. He is a happy, easygoing person, who radiates exuberant benevolence. I decided to accept his offer, because I had forgotten to ask Sharla about a dwelling. Perhaps what followed was a test, although I did not know about it. I followed Henry to his house. It proved to be built in a castle style, and when he saw my surprise, he asked me if I did not remember that his name in Italy had been Enrico and that we had incarnated together in a similar house. The palace was creamy white, and on the front side it was ornamented like a croquembouch. On the inside, it was a giant nightmare. Henry obviously loved extravagant Rococo style, with gold and boughs everywhere. I did not want to hurt my old friend's feelings, so I gave him a kind smile when he showed me where to sleep, a room of dazzling luxury, a four-poster bed with golden ornaments, and inspiring paintings of bedroom scenes. How did you put this together? I wondered carefully. It's all precipitated. He proudly answered. Have you not learned that yet? No, I answered, only to materialize and dematerialize my own body. Oh my! Henry exclaimed and stared at me in surprise. I haven't learned that yet. You must be a highly evolved soul. Let's not make comparisons, I warned. The angels use different teaching methods for us because we are so different. But do you mean that this kind of palace can be conjured forth by the mythought? Not only palaces, Henry answered contentedly. Everything, just everything. I can teach you. It is very simple. Do you think we are allowed to? I asked, to be on the safe side. It sounded exciting, and moreover, I did not feel like living in this marzipan cake for very long. Of course, was his calm answer. We belong to the same soul group, and we are supposed to help and teach each other. It would be strange not to. Henry was right. Precipitating was much easier than materializing and dematerializing. It did not take me long to understand how to do it, since I had learned to concentrate deeply. It was one of the first things you learned in the angels' school. To precipitate implies deep concentration. You concentrate hard on the object you wish to manifest. Every detail of it must be ready in your thoughts when you start. We began with some minor objects. I wished for a pair of white socks. There must be a need for one's wish, in order for the experiment to succeed. I looked down at my bare feet in the sandals, waved my toes a little, and really felt how frozen they were. After a few moments, a pair of thin white socks was lying in my hand. It worked. The next object I wished forth for myself was a bicycle. Henry roared with laughter. It does not suit well in these surroundings, he cried, as I excitedly cycled away from him. You don't use bicycles here. I leaned my bicycle against a tree and carried on with my very own magic. After a while, a big table stood in Henry's garden. On it were a bunch of carrots, a torch, a loaf of bread and a tub of butter, a pair of underpants, and a chamber pot. What a strange mixture, Henry muttered. What are you going to do with all those things? You told me to create the small things before I started on the house, did not you? I reminded him. I'm going to continue with the furniture. This was great fun. I could go on forever. So I did. It wasn't long before I stood half buried in household utensils, clothes, carpets, curtains, furniture, and tools. Behind Henry's cream cake house was a garden with a huge lawn. That's where we were located. Imagine my surprise when Sharla suddenly appeared. Henry and I were in full swing, creating fancy goods. He was really skilled. Not even the originator of Mason China could have told the difference between his own work and Henry's. "What are you doing?" Sharla cried. "Are you crazy? Are you precipitating for fun, big grown-up angel boys? Have you forgotten where you are? If Tsar finds out about this, I don't know what he will do with you. To make jokes is one thing, but this is no joke. This is wasting the gifts of the Great Spirit. Now watch me." In one single moment, all we had created forth was wiped out, including Henry's cake castle and the garden. "I came here to look after you and see if our newcomer Jen had a bed to sleep in. What do I find? Two little boys playing with creation. These are the kind of games which are about to finish up your beloved Earth. Abuse of power is another term for it." I fell on my knees before Sharla. I felt so ashamed, I could not look her in the eye. She stood silently for a long time, looking at us. Henry had sat on the ground, with his hands covering his face. We were devastated. "Get up," Sharla commanded. "I think the mere fright is punishment enough for you. Jan, you must promise me not to precipitate one more single object before you have learned more about it in the Angels' School." This was a pale imitation of the real procedure, and what you have created forth could just as easily disappear. "Henry, you must create a more suitable dwelling. Your castle was too ostentatious. I cannot believe that such foolish talents still remain within you. We'll have to get rid of them before you can proceed. I will talk to your teachers." She disappeared, and Henry and I looked at each other blankly. We hadn't meant any harm or done any wrong consciously, maybe that was why we were spared more punishment. Henry was fond of knick-knacks, and I was, as usual, curious of my own capability. When we first came to the Angels' School, we had learned self-control and simplicity. I was a master of the latter, but the former was a quality that I had always lacked, and so did Henry. When we returned to school, we were punished with a walk through the different realms of the No Man's World, in order to discover what the weaknesses in our characters could create. I assure you that it was not a pleasant walk. We got to visit the abode of the unblessed souls, purgatory or hell, whatever it's called, and watch the self-imposed suffering that leads nowhere. After that, we returned home and got to meditate on the contact with our own inner selves. I don't know how long this punishment went on. It seemed a very long time for both of us, although it maybe was only a few hours. Meanwhile, Tiri worked on much more exciting things. Occasionally she came over and told us, to give us an idea of what delights were in store for us. Tiri is a very captivating person. I have never been particularly obedient. A little spirit of rebellion lives in my chest, which I have a hard time keeping in check, even here. Tsar, of course, knows about this. It was a long time after our prank before I was allowed to meet him again, and it felt empty. Neither did Sharla appear. At first I felt offended, and thought that friends may not abandon each other. Then I examined my inner self. I realized that it must be absolutely pure and I was taught by my leaders. I worked hard during this period. I got to meet near ones and dear ones who had passed the border, but not yet incarnated again. When they were to go down, I was called to them and explained to them the importance of keeping a pure consciousness and filling their thoughts with love when they were reborn. Each of them brought along a gift to Earth, a positive quality to manage and develop in the best way. Some of them were scared of being reborn, but understood that it was necessary, since they had not finished their karma. I calmed them and gave them good tasks that they hopefully would remember sometime on Earth. I distributed power and positive energies, I supported and encouraged them. These experiences took place in many different worlds where I was called to take care of souls in various stages of development. After an interesting and instructive time, I had finished this work, and finally I was allowed to meet Sharla and Tsar again. 15. The Ashtar Command. "My dear friend," Tsar exclaimed, and embraced me. "When you lived on Earth, it was important for you to understand that you were responsible for your own life. You were responsible to yourself when you had chosen your path, not to anybody else. You were responsible for your family, but only temporarily. You could never blame others when you had done something silly yourself. To lay one's blame upon others is not accepted here. You have been held accountable for exactly that thing. When you precipitated, you blamed Henry all along within yourself. He was the one who had taught you, he was the one to blame for your exaggeration by taking part in it. But here, in the angelic realm, one must take responsibility for one's own actions. If one cannot do that, one has to move to a world where one learns to understand that truth. You don't need to do that. We have looked into your heart and we know the inner January. You are about to learn who you are, something that every individual asks herself at one time or another. Who am I? Why am I me? Will I always remain me? Oh yes, I eagerly interrupted, those are certainly questions I have asked myself many times. The answer is easier than you think, Tsar said, smiling. I guess you will figure it out gradually. I won't serve it up for tea. Now we will continue your education on another level, and Sharla and I will accompany you the whole time. First, we are going to travel together again. You'll get to visit our military facilities that are located on the outskirts of the ethereal world. I was never more than a lance corporal, I muttered. Soon you will meet several generals, Sharla said, laughing. I must inform Jen of one thing, Tsar interrupted. There is a galactic confederation that guards Earth, in order to be able to step in if nuclear disturbances threaten both the planet and the surrounding ether. The space fleet in charge is known by the name of Ashtar Command. It has participants both from the Masters and the Angelic Realms, but also from other planets, galaxies, and universes. I don't know if I should describe what was now shown to me as a military base with an elongated citadel, or as an airfield of a different kind. It went all around the ethereal world and contained hangars, dwellings for the various troop units, large digital facilities, as it looked to my ignorant eyes, and much, much more. There were many other buildings, spacious parks and gardens, bailing establishments, training fields, and enormous landing grounds everywhere. I got to see beings that did not appear particularly human. It was like walking straight into a science fiction story. Some of them were reminiscent of animals, some resembled the traditional image of humanoids, with spindly bodies and large heads, enormous eyes, and rudimentary noses, mouths, and ears. All these beings radiated love. There was feverish activity, yet in the middle of their work, these beings broke off to come up and embrace us in the most unmilitary way. To my surprise, I discovered that I could communicate with them. They seemed intelligent and quick-witted. I asked them about their machines and other technical equipment. When I had gotten so far, Tsar interrupted me. Sharla and I are leaving now, he said. We'll leave you here for some time. It is a part of your education as an adept to be familiar with everything that goes on in the ethereal world, as well as in the other worlds. If you work with the Ashtar Command for a while, you will really learn how to work in an unselfish and loving way. We will come and pick you up when you are finished with this. He was off like a shot, and I was left standing there. But I did not even have time to ponder my situation before a young man in a white uniform patted me on the shoulder in a friendly way. My name is Tone, and I have been commissioned to show you the way about here, he said. Come with me, please. He took me to my lodging, a cozy and comfortable room in one of the rows of houses I had seen during our flight. Now, I'll first take you to the base, Tone continued. The Commander-in-Chief wants to see you, to give you your first task. The Commander-in-Chief looked like a Native American. It is true that he was dressed in the same white uniform as Tone, but his headdress was different. It consisted of an enormously high, ornate and jeweled diadem, with long drops dangling at his sides and a bush of multicolored feathers, gently swinging in the light breeze. Yes, I was an American Indian chief in my last earthly incarnation, he said, with a smile. Of course, he had. Read my thoughts. Here I represent the people of the sun and the stars from Zio. As you understand, I come from the outskirts of this galaxy, far away. But I am well informed about everything which concerns this galaxy and what a bad state Earth is in. You will for some time be part of my army as a light warrior. Don't misinterpret the word warrior. We are peaceful fighters, and our most important weapon is love. Is that clear, combatant? Phew, I thought, as my memories of being a soldier came back to me. But I straightened my light legs and saluted the American Indian chief, whose name was General Kuali, as I got to know later on, looked at me in a friendly way. Here you have nothing to fear, he said. You cannot compare my regiment with an earthly counterpart. Slavish discipline is something for humans. Here everyone performs his, her duty and we have a good time together. It's as simple as that. You obey your inner voice, which in turn comes from the Great Spirit. That is the kind of obedience we expect from you. To my great surprise, he embraced me first and subsequently Tone, who was still standing at my side. Later on, when I asked Tone about my task, he answered with a broad smile, "You will simply belong to my unit. First you will be given more suitable clothes, and after that you will meet the pals." The clothes consisted of a white, tight silver shimmering suit in two parts. A short white cape went with it. A circular disc with symbols on it was applied on the chest. It was very beautifully designed, and I fingered it with interest. Tone swiftly removed my fingers from the jewelry. "The disc is a kind of alarm device," he explained. "You couldn't know that. One is supposed to press here and though with various codes that you must learn. Here's a belt with pockets in it. The You Keep a Crystal, which serves as communication when you are very far away. There is also a holster for weapons that you will obtain information about later. Sometimes they are necessary to carry. This is an amethyst device that directs the course when it is set to Pathfinder mode. Radar is the closest word to explain its functions. It triggers warnings when needed, and it finds every path in the whole galaxy." I was back at school again. But I was at once admitted into the peer gang, and to my great surprise, Terry was included there. "This is obviously no male-dominated society," I thought cheerfully, as I embraced her. "No, there are several women here, as you can see," she said, laughing. "But no one is as beautiful as you," I whispered in her rosy ear, where a cascade of red golden curls just had been liberated from the compulsory hood that we all wore. It was the same material as the suits. It was a tight fit around the head and did not leave the slightest tuft loose. All of us had different emblems on our caps. They were probably coded, too. To my great delight, there was an eagle on my emblem. It is the bird I admire the most. It symbolizes boldness and freedom, two qualities I think I have always carried within myself. What did we learn in this different cadet school? Answer. Everything. We prepared ourselves for earthly visits. We learned materialization and dematerialization, although I already knew that. We learned to tackle all imaginable situations which might arise in connection with our surveillance tasks. We learned to eliminate poisonous gases, to obliterate all other toxic emissions that exist everywhere in the atmosphere around the Earth, and which threaten to damage the nearest planets and stars. The holes in the ozone layer must be mended or the rays of the sun will kill instead of giving warmth. There must be watchmen in many places, both on Earth and in the atmosphere around it, who can intervene in case of urgent states of emergency. Mission North America. After all the philosophy of life I hitherto had acquired, it was almost a pleasant feeling to get some more practical tasks. It was even more pleasant when I was commanded on an important mission together with Diri. We were going to Earth in our ethereal bodies, and we were not allowed to materialize unless it was absolutely necessary. The mission concerned the nuclear power station in North America. It was a very serious situation, because there was a risk of a meltdown. We had to make sure that such a scenario was prevented. If there was a meltdown, it would cause more misery than we could ever imagine. We were summoned to General Kuali to get instructions on how to behave. "Kuali means good in Native American," Terry whispered to me, before we were entering the general's room. A binding name, I whispered back. He is the best, Terry replied, and I felt very curious. Tone was there, too. To my great surprise, the general himself was going to escort us. I will come with you to monitor the work, he explained. Tone has worked with atomic explosions during his life on Earth. Jan knows Earth better than the rest of us, and furthermore, he has both sense and imagination. Terry represents Yin, and moreover, she is bold and ingenious. But first, I will explain the strategic situation. A teacher will soon come and tell you how to go about it, and thereafter we will meet in Hangar. Tell us when you are ready for departure. It's not a matter of hours and minutes here. What happens usually happens very swiftly, and our instructor for the journey to Earth was both quick and efficient. We obtained lots of information that we brought along in a kind of microchip. Soon we had installed ourselves in a craft that I thought resembled a UFO. I asked why we couldn't travel through the underground tunnels like I had with Tsar. Kuali answered that the Ashtar Command uses only spacecraft and that the tunnels were used mostly by the Masters. I felt a bit jittery going back to Mother Earth in this kind of craft and in addition going abroad. I wasn't exactly an accustomed America traveler. The beacon Tall Jan from good old Sweden was now a beacon in a double sense. I have always considered Sweden the most beautiful country in the world, but then of course, I haven't experienced many other places to compare it with. Terry came from New Zealand, but I did not even dare to think that far away. Yet she had the looks of a Swedish lass. Yes, she actually reminded me of one of the girls that used to be up at the mansion when I was a boy, those who were known as trainees and who you peeped at on the sly. It was night when we landed in a desert place. Our ethereal bodies could, of course, not be affected by the highly dangerous emission, in case that would happen. Without major difficulty, we managed to gain entry to the nuclear power station. So there we were. All four of us stood hand in hand in the gigantic building. Such power stations had been in their infancy during my last decade on Earth. So now I found myself in the middle of this dangerous building, and guess if I was curious. We did not experience the atmosphere the same way as the physical humans did, but we really got to experience how human nature expressed itself in various ways. Some people worked silently and intensively, trying to prevent the meltdown, others were simply hysterical. Some just yelled. The catastrophe was imminent when we intervened. The leakage had started, even if it was on a small scale. I will not weary my readers by describing in detail what we did, because my technical knowledge is very poor. Neither do we want to take the credit for saving the nuclear power station, while competent humans risked their lives in order to save the lives of others. Terry and I worked on the destruction of the dangerous poison before it had time to penetrate the humans. We protected them with clean air curtains and embedded them in clouds of ethereal tinctures of balsam, which penetrated their bodies and served as defense mechanisms. Kuali and Tone entered straight into the meltdown. I dare not imagine what they did there, but the leakage ceased very rapidly. At one point, things were about to go wrong. Terry was so eager to save and help that she forgot about her invisibility. It can happen to any of us when we get excited. It has happened to me, too. Terry was in the act of helping a hysterical woman who was just crying and crying. She tried to influence the woman mentally, but nothing helped. Tyrus' loving attempts to penetrate the woman's howls with calming vibrations resulted in that she unconsciously started to materialize because of the strain. I was occupied working in another quarter, but I caught sight of Tyrus' incipient physical form and hurried to her side. I succeeded in averting the materialization so that my unsuspecting colleague regained her ethereal body. Then I plunged the yelling woman into a deep sleep, since there was such turmoil, and everybody ran pell-mell. Nobody had discovered what was going on. Someone seized the sleeping woman and dragged her out of the building. Terry cried with relief. Kuali praised me afterwards, but Terry felt ashamed before me. She kept close to Tone throughout the journey home, and I conversed with Kuali. I increasingly admired and respected this remarkable man. He asserted that before the humans on Earth understand that they must try to find their way back to their origin, to the old way of living together in community and peace, before then, there is no solution to the problems of modern times. He illustrated the situation of the Native Americans in a different way than what I had heard before.